Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and the only place you can hear the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. Just going into New York from JFK after an 8-hour delay from New Orleans. You know about that stuff. I got to tell you, a friend of mine went into the doctor, and he said, Doctor, I think I'm a cowboy. The doctor said, well, how long is this going on for? My friend said, about a yeehaw. Thank you very much. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. Been going for about a yeehaw. Oh, my gosh. Sometimes great, sometimes brutal. That was brutal. But we love you, Duff. Thank you for always being, consistent, shall we say. Every Friday, you get the Duff McKagan joke of the week. And Duff and Guns N' Roses are headed to South America next year, headlining Lollapalooza in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. And Slash confirmed that the band is working on new music. So maybe that's coming out next year as well. Huge, huge Guns N' Roses news. And huge, huge news today. What I can tell you for sure is that Enzo and Cass are back in a big way. They're Cass XL and NZO now. And they're telling their stories today on Talk is Jericho. They're both fired at different times from WWE. And then Cass battled some addiction issues. He suffered a seizure at a signing in public, but he's made a tremendous recovery. Enzo and Cass also had a big falling out and didn't speak for over a year. So they're talking about everything that happened to them, what got them back on the road to recovery, got them back into the business, and what they think of the indie scene. A real candid conversation with them. We're here with Big Cass and Enzo. What's the names now, though?
Enzo and Cass
XL.
Cass XL.
So how we got the monikers of Real One and XL,
right?
And Enzo and Cass.
How can you still be Enzo?
Well, that's the complication right now.
Oh, okay.
So I did get a little hiccup in the road. So when I first got fired, I had already trademarked and owned Real One.
Really? Oh, Real One, right.
Real One. Yeah. When I changed my name on Instagram to Real One, I didn't tell the company, but I had already filed trademark and copyright on it. And then the WWE did the work for me to get Real One as my handle.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Because that's not an easy thing to get, I guess. So they did that for me, but they didn't know that I owned the name and everything. And I was just kind of planning for the future, not knowing when or if ever I would need to.
But it's interesting, though, because both you guys, it's such a whirlwind story of, you know, Enzo and Big Cass, NXT stars coming to WWE, huge merch sellers, super over, working on top, main event. We did some stuff, Cass, together.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you go to...
Yeah, but I opened off Raw against you one night.
That's right.
I think a month into the business.
Yeah, but then you go to shit. 205 and you take over that show, which I knew you would. It was actually my suggestion.
That was all you. I will give you every bit of credit for that, Chris, because you didn't talk to me about it, but I got caught in a million tweets because you were gone with the company. You had already left.
Mm-hmm.
People were asking you about the company, what you thought, you know, to revitalize 205 Live and for me to get work, for guys that would allow me to do things, to, you know, get the experience.
Well, and plus to give the show some character, and nothing against those guys, they're all great workers, but there was no personalities on that show. And Enzo is a big personality, and once again, you took it over. But pretty much at the same time, both you guys then get fired after about a year, 2 years. It was such a and then all these crazy things have happened in your lives during, since, to where now, you know, and we'll get to this. It seems like you guys are back on track. You're together again. You both look great. But I mean, what a story you've had in the last few years.
Yeah, it's been quite the whirlwind, the ups and downs and then the big ups and very big downs. So I know for me personally,
that's a long way down from 7 feet.
Yeah, I've hit some very high highs, but my lows have been like very, very low.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did you end up getting fired? Because once again, like I said, I wasn't there.
Yeah. I kind of just lost my mind towards the end. I was battling with some things, with some mental health issues that I didn't speak up about, or I didn't tell anybody. There were like two people.
Including me.
Yeah.
Because you guys weren't talking for a while. You kind of...
I didn't care if he was dead.
You had a falling out. I remember you...
Yeah, I didn't care if he was dead.
Yeah, wow. We didn't talk, man. It was real.
Wow.
And so I just was out of control, drinking a lot, making very, very bad decisions, going off script on live television, which was a very, very big mistake.
Really?
Yes.
Was it something to do with like a little person in Vince or something?
Yeah. I went out there in Montreal, very smart mark crowd. And when I, you know, gave the little person the boot, I looked out in the crowd. And this segment was designed to get me mega heat, like mega heat.
Mm-hmm.
And after I did that, I looked out in the crowd. And to be honest with you, I'd say half the people were laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they thought it was funny. And in my mind, I was thinking, this is not what they want behind the curtain. They're like, this was specifically designed to get me like uber heat. So I was like panicking because I was like, this is not the reaction they want. So then I did what I felt was right. And
you continued to beat up the little person.
Yeah.
Right?
And it was, when I got back through the curtain, it was very, very bad. It was a bad night for me.
Oh, Vince was not happy.
That is the understatement of the century.
Wow. Because he doesn't rarely get mad either.
Furious.
Yeah, he'll get someone else to yell at you, but not him usually.
No, he was furious.
You think that was the final straw?
That was the first straw.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Rightfully so. I mean, that was just such a bad decision. So stupid. And then... I think that I was changing as a human, and I think people started realizing that, even people I interacted with on a daily basis years prior, like people that came up with me in NXT or came down to NXT to guest coach or guest produce on like TV tapings. They knew William Morrissey, like the guy, like you the guy that you knew. I wasn't him anymore. I became a totally different person. I was tremendous anxiety and just out of control, showing up to TV late, like things I wouldn't do in a million years, like a year prior, 2 years prior. And then on the European tour, again, I was out of control, completely just uncontrollable. And I think that was, they were like something like they saw me as a liability and they're like, this is not good.
Which is so weird for an act of that. Well, you guys had already broken up as an act, but for a guy your size,
yeah,
good look that you have. Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying when you got fired. I was like, wow, he must have really...
Up oh, I did
to,
really
to, for that to happen.
And look, I'll admit it. Like I know when I've done wrong, and I really
well, those things too. I mean, and you went through this as well, Enzo. When you get to the big leagues, you know, sometimes you start losing it a bit. You know, I remember.
Dude, there's nothing that can prepare you for that whirlwind, especially if you're Enzo and Kaz.
How do you?
I mean, we walked in the door. Remember, we're green. You know what I mean?
Yeah, green, right?
Super green.
Yeah.
We walked through the door to one of the biggest ovations that the business had seen on a debut, and we had no idea what was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whirlwind, the roller coaster ride for the next 2 years that we went on, nothing could have anticipated. I mean, I wrestled Chris Jericho in the opener at SummerSlam that year, in my rookie year.
Yeah, and like your debut, you had been on national television every week for many years going into that.
Right.
We had only been seen on the network.
Right.
So we came out to that ovation, and people at home must have been like,
it was the night after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That European crowd from NXT. Yeah.
Was it Dallas?
Yeah.
Good memory there. But people knew you were coming. And like you were going to say, when people at home watch these two guys that have never seen come with this huge ovation, or people in the crowd here who are like, well, what are we missing? I'll clap too. Who are these guys? They must be stars.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what happened right off the bat. And because you're so good, or so big, you're so good on the mic,
you had this great mix and the catchphrases, which people love, which leads to the merchandise. And suddenly you're one of the top acts, even though ability wise and mind wise, you're not there yet.
Very green
as it can be. But we were so lucky because they knew we were green. Mm-hmm. They didn't overdo it in the ring with people and stuff. And they put us out there with Bubba and Devon right away, who called matches to us on the fly for 3 straight months on the road. And then every Raw and SmackDown, me and Cass would do the dark match. And whoever that was out there, whether it was you, Cena, Ambrose, Roman, somebody was on our team in a 6-man tag match at the end of every Raw and SmackDown, we did the dark. And it was then that we learned the most. Because you're listening to Jericho call it to you. You're listening to Cena call it to you from the apron. The people in the second row can hear it, but you're learning. So those days were instrumental, like what we did off TV and stuff to, you know, and get in the ring with guys on live events and stuff, you know? Like
I remember, like we were talking about kind of losing the plot of it. And it was one time we were in Europe or something like that. And you had a portable speaker attached to your knapsack, drinking like a beer or whatever in the airport, listening to music, drinking. And I remember I was like, dude, come here. I know you think you're Keith Richards. So do I. But the difference is Keith Richards owns the Rolling Stones. We don't own the WWE. Turn it down.
Oh, Chris, you were so good to me. You know, it's funny we said this. One time, I know you probably saw it. X-Pac recently came out and said that you were beating me up at the Rainbow Room. Oh. And in my mind, I'm like, if Chris ever gave me a noogie or grabbed me in a headlock or started ripping my hair out or something like that, like that was, I mean.
Yeah, I think I just punched you in the shoulder hard or something like that.
Bro, I mean, probably every day. I don't know.
No, but I could see it coming because like I said, I've been there before and I've seen guys do this and I could tell sooner or later it's going to come to a head. Now, with you leaving the company with all the other shit that happened, but.
No, but that's it, man. And that was what Hunter was fearful of. So I don't blame Hunter for being the guy that wanted me gone when shit hit the fan because he didn't want me in that situation where it could happen.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I put myself in the situation where something like that could happen to me. And he knew that that would be potentially happening. Now, Chris Jericho at the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert backstage, you've been to that dance 100 times, brother. Mm-hmm. And you know probably half the band. Enzo's at the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert backstage for the first time. And he's getting lit up. And he's having the time of his life. I'm not thinking about nothing. You put yourself there. So my thing is that I came out and I said, I'm not apologizing. Okay. Mm-hmm. I got a target on my back and I'll own it. I put myself in that situation. I own it. And I'm sorry for the people that I disappointed with the outcome of the situation, but I didn't go into a situation thinking that, you know, that was even a possibility.
And
that's my fault because you need to have that thought in the back of your mind when you're a celebrity. You're only a celebrity for the first time once. And you're only out in the world experiencing it for the first time once. And a mistake is a mistake if you don't learn from it. So now I'm more conscious. You know what I mean?
Right, now you know.
And like you were saying, like him on European tours, he was out of control. Come on, you were out of control.
Well, you know, people hate to see you having a good time. Let me just say that.
Well, yeah. Out of control in a way that, like I said, I've been there. I was that in 2005, walking around with my shirt open in the airport, didn't give a shit, cares,
yeah,
rock star.
And the interesting dichotomy is like everybody would try to come talk to me to calm him down because I was like the model employee. I was the guy that followed the rules. I wasn't doing shit like that. So then when it got to the point where on that European tour after I came back, I became that guy. That's when people were like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Because that's not the guy I know.
You changed.
I changed big because I was always the calm guy.
I never met that guy. Mm-hmm. I never met that guy that he's talking about, that he became. I never even met him. It wasn't until I spoke to people like, you know, who are my homies, like Fergal, like Finn Balor, and they're like, talk to your boy, man. Like, you haven't talked to him in a long time, but you need to talk to him. Samoa Joe reached out to me like, hey, talk to your boy, man. And I'm like, why? I'm like, I haven't talked to him in a year, bro. We don't talk. Then Cass called me like 4 or 5 times the week before he had the seizure. And when he called me 4 or 5 times, I turned to my mother and I was living with my grandmother who was sick and she was passing away. So I packed up my bags from LA on a whim got fired, my dog died, then I found out my grandma had congestive heart failure.
It's like a country music song.
Yeah, bro. So my grandma had congestive heart failure. I packed my bags and I just drove across the country. And that was why I told you I went to CC, saw him out there, wrestled alligators on a boat with the kid from Tough Enough.
Yeah.
Took my time with it. But when Cass called me, my mom told me to call him back. Like, if he's calling you, he's probably calling you for a reason. And Cass could tell you more than I could. He was checking that bucket list, saying goodbye to people.
I was pretty much just it wasn't like, you know, grim or anything. Like I was, you know, going to attempt anything. That's never been the case. It was just, I knew the life that I was living at that point was so unhealthy.
You were drinking yourself to death.
Drinking myself. So yes. I was pretty much, when I called him, like as grim as it sounds, I was just tying up loose ends.
I thought
something like the way I was living, I was living so unhealthy, it couldn't go on for much longer. And like the seizure was the wake up call. But in that moment that I called Enzo, I was like, man, let me just tie up that loose end because, you know, he was my best friend for 5 years before falling out. So
what was the falling out all about?
Well,
we were kind of hating each other for a while.
Just been around each other too
much. Well, you know how it goes, bro. I mean, you know how it goes better than anybody. And also in the process in the WWE of breaking guys up who are popular, they're pulling him in a separate room. They're pulling me in a separate room. They're having separate conversations. Yeah. They're trying to plant that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At that time, you're starting to prepare yourself for your solo career. And Cass is starting to prepare himself for his solo career, and they break us up. And if you remember, Chris, I think I was a month into the business when I came up to you and I asked you about the music. Mm. And I was like, hey, man, you have any advice for how to do the music when you're in the company? And you said to me, you're like, hey, bro, you signed that contract and the music, you know how that works.
It's going to have to wait. Yeah.
And it's going to have to wait. And so I put it all on hold. After I talked to you for advice on the music, I literally did not make music. I just put it on hold. Then I got that concussion. And I got knocked out cold on pay-per-view, and they didn't tell me if I was going to be able to wrestle ever again for a couple weeks. So I got into the studio right then and there, started making music for a backup plan. Like, I don't know, like, what happens if I can't wrestle? Like, do I be a manager? Am I a commentator? Do I want to do that forever? So I got in the studio with no plans of dropping that music or anything like that. You know, you get fired, and what am I going to do? You know?
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Cass, when you're talking about, you know, making these calls because you thought you were on your way out, because I saw that you did one independent match and you were huge. I don't know what you weigh now, but you probably were an extra 30, 40 pounds heavier.
Yeah, I probably was probably around the same weight, except I had no upper body size. My arms were like...
It was a shock because you see what you look like before. Yeah,
and that's what you look like when for 6 months you just drink.
Yeah.
And eat shit.
Yeah.
Like that and not work out. That's what happens when you just watch Netflix.
Was it depression because you got fired?
No, I have suffered with depression way back in NXT and anxiety.
I
mean,
when I lived with Cass and we were working, like I know him better than anybody. Like when you called me that day, I knew you were drunk. Mm. You know what I mean? He can never hide that from me. If I could sense it in his voice. And when he's off, I also know. And we'd be at the apartment and it might be something that, you know, happened at home that set him off. And I know that switch. And I also know that guy right before we go through the curtain. And we were the perfect dichotomy because I would be like, bro, fuck, kidding me? We're going out there. We're gonna kill it. Dude, we're gonna crush this, knock it out of the park. We're gonna be the best in the world. Nobody can touch us. How you doing? Walk through the curtain and he's feeling that right then there at that moment. But those are NXT early days.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, you got that confidence. You built that up. And now he's out there and he's crushing it. They break us up. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and I think that the lifestyle I was living was because I didn't have responsibilities. I was depressed, you know, when I came back. And the only thing that would prevent me from living that lifestyle was I got to get on a flight Saturday morning and I got to go do a loop.
Mm.
So Thursday or Friday, I wouldn't drink. But now I had indie bookings, but I didn't consider them like a big responsibility at that point.
You can show up when you want.
Yeah.
Do what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. So there was nothing stopping me from living that life. And when I was with WWE, I would live that life Wednesday and Thursday and Tuesday night. But then Friday would come around. Shit, I got to fly out tomorrow. You got to get your act together. But without that structure in my life and that responsibility, I pretty much could do whatever the fuck I wanted. Plenty of money in the bank. Mm. I could live off that shit for years. Enzo knows I don't spend very much.
One thing about Cass, I don't know if you guys know, he's an NYU grad, and pretty much everybody in his class is working on Wall Street right now. So that money that he made, you know. Right.
I did good things with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so plenty of money in the bank.
I got a few pairs of sneakers, you know.
Plenty of money in the bank and no responsibilities.
Yeah.
I want to watch Netflix or HBO Go or whatever and drink all day. I can do that.
Right.
So that's what I did.
That was your goal, and then you achieved it. Yeah. So what made you finally change your mind?
The seizure.
What was the seizure from?
It was from alcohol withdrawal. So I had no education on that matter. I didn't know that alcohol withdrawal could kill you.
Hmm.
And the seizure is as far as you can get before you're dead. The seizure can kill you.
Sure.
I didn't know that you could have a seizure from alcohol withdrawal. Now I know a lot about it because I've researched the matter. But I had been drinking so heavily for so long that 13 hours without alcohol in my system put my body into shock.
Wow.
Yes.
So you weren't even trying to quit drinking. You just hadn't drank that day, basically, or whatever.
Yeah, because I had to get up and do the signing in the morning at the House of Hardcore show. I started signing at 10 a.m.
Let's talk about the significance real quick. You know, Chris, I am a super spiritual guy. I don't know if many people know that about me, but like my grandparents and my mother are Eucharistic ministers at church. Mm. So my mother, she gives you communion if you go to the Catholic Church.
Gotcha.
And I was raised in a house where like mom didn't curse and dad doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't do nothing. My dad's like a comic book nerd. My dad likes comic books and action figures and stuff. And here I am, this guy that's, you know, kind of into other things.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that this past year of allowed me that opportunity for the first time in 6 years to get away from pro wrestling and get back with family that had been away from me.
Grounded you.
Grounded me, man. Yeah. And just, it was such a humbling experience to know that, you know, like, yeah, wrestling fans are the best fans in the world. And so many of them got my back, afforded me the opportunity to put 572 days in between wrestling matches. You know, I didn't need to get in a ring and wrestle. I mean, we made some good money in the WWE, but more importantly than that, like other opportunities to just sign autographs or make music and stuff or do interviews and stuff. Like I had been at home in New Jersey for the first time since I was 18.
Hmm.
You know, I left home at 18, right, and I haven't gone back since. Now I'm 32. I mean, when January hits and my lease ends on a house that I didn't plan on leasing because shit hit the fan, you bet your ass I'm coming back to palm trees, whether that's L.A. or Florida or something. You got to go back to wrestling territory.
So you got, and going back to Cassier, when you had your seizure, that gave you a wake-up call to quit drinking?
Yeah. In the hospital, they told me that I could have died right then and there.
Hmm.
With the amount I've been drinking, they were surprised I made it that far. And some asshole, instead of calling 911, recorded it, put it on YouTube. And I got friends and family and people in the business and former coworkers
watching. Isn't that brutal?
What a dick.
Unbelievable. You
know, film it instead of calling.
Unbelievable.
Calling to help this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And regardless, so that guy did that. And I got people that know me seeing this video. It's embarrassing.
Mm.
So, yeah. That's when I decided, like, this has to stop.
That's the rock bottom that you
rock hit. Bottom. Yeah. Almost dead. People see you at your weakest moment on YouTube. I don't even know how many views that video has, but I'm sure everybody I know has seen it.
Yeah. Hey, whoever filmed that, go f*** your ass.
Yeah,
how's that
seriously.
Sound?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Did you see it, Enzo?
Well, that's what I wanted to say was I'm spiritual, right?
Right.
I believe in the numbers quite a bit. You know, when I see 11-11, you know, when I see 333, I know, like, okay.
Something's going on, right?
And if you know about astrology and you're into that shit at all, though, you know, we're in a very significant shifting of, you know, we had a blood moon 2 days ago and it's kind of crazy energy. Well, Cass, me and him, he got fired a year to the day that we broke up on television. So I don't know if there was like a check on Cass in the notes or something like that in Vince's phone, but he got fired a year to that date. On my birthday, he had a seizure. on his birthday 2 days ago, I had my first match back. The day that my grandmother died was the day I knew, let's just say I knew, that I was doing Madison Square Garden with Big Cass and reuniting. So significant days in my life, extremely significant, that significant things have been happening on. And our life to this point right now is just a movie script waiting to be written. We're blessed in what the future holds. You know, I have no idea, but I know it's going to be great.
But did you see the video?
December 8th, my birthday, I'm with my family for the first time on my birthday, sitting there relaxing when tweets start, you know, tagging me, and I see it. Then I look at my phone and I get a text from Bubba Ray. And as I call Uncle Bubba was like, you need to holler at your boy. And he didn't know that Cass called me earlier that week. We had spoke.
Before the seizure.
A week before. And the very next day that he had the seizure, I got in my car that morning and I drove down to Delaware and saw Cass for the first time.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, you had.
Then I went to Delaware.
Well, yeah, he went to Delaware right after that with Doug Lawson. So Doug Lawson is the autograph agent for Michael Strahan, Ray Lewis, Deion Sanders, a bunch of NFL guys. He was at an autograph signing with Deion Sanders when Cass was there doing an autograph signing. He's a big fan of Enzo and Cass. He walks up to Cass and says, you look depressed, you look out of shape, and I want to help you. Now imagine you're Cass. You're sitting there like, who the fuck are you?
Because you never want to hear that when you know that you're out of shape and depressed.
And I've never seen this guy. Right?
It's like when someone says, man, you look tired. You're like, fuck you, I am tired. You don't have to tell me.
Yeah. So I was like, when he came up to me, that was my first instinct was, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, fuck you.
Right.
But then I got to chatting with him, and everything he was saying was right. And he just said, I'm going to get you sober. And I'm going to get you in the best shape of your life. And that's exactly what he did.
Wow. That guy is the man. Yeah, and he has been instrumental in, at this point now, both of our careers and in the comeback of wrestling. Because mind you, when I got let go, to be honest, bro, I was humbled by my career. I just looked at it and I was like, bro, what happened? Like, how, what? Like, I couldn't believe that happened to me. So I was like, I can't give this shit a sequel, dude. I'm scared to. Like, I don't even want to go back out there and try this again. How could I do that again? I didn't even know I could do it. So I was like, man, I'm done with this, bro. Like I had a good run.
Yeah, you could tell that. But I know, like, in 2005, I left the business because I was burned out, hated wrestling, didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I didn't watch wrestling for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I didn't watch anything.
No interest. Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing interests me at all. I watched Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Yeah, Royal Rumble. Because Finn's my homie. Yeah. And him working Brock would have been cool for me to see. Because I personally think Brock is killing it. Like that match against Finn, selling the commentators, putting over the diver, and the story they told. I was like, so happy for Finn because Brock was selling for a guy that's 180 pounds.
Yeah.
So it was
Brock,
cool.
Brock's good. He knows.
Brock is good.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So when you're talking about Doug helping you out, Cass, and how hard is it to kick the alcohol?
I mean,
well, nicotine, tobacco, well, anything he walked, Doug checked the bags when you walked in the house.
When I got in his house, he checked and he threw out fat burners.
Oh, so you went to live at his place?
Yep.
And this is like a lockdown for you.
Pretty much. Yeah. He had cameras and stuff to make sure, like, when he went out to the grocery store that I didn't sneak booze in or anything.
Yeah, and he has a big gym that he trains college athletes at, you know, and NFL guys.
Yeah, so, the seizure almost killing me. Like, I don't think the withdrawal could go any further. So now I'm under constant watch and... even if I wanted to drink, I couldn't. Like, I got there and he went through my bags and I had a fat burner. And, like, he looked at the ingredients and he thought that, like, maybe one of them would be a trigger. Chucked them out, like a fat burner. So I couldn't do anything. Nicotine, booze, fat burner.
I would come down there, bro. I would go down to Delaware with a can of dip, like a log. kick ass, escape for a minute.
Yeah.
Chew a big lip in the parking lot and go back into the sober house.
So everything, and I know this because I know like my friend Duff from Guns N' Roses, same thing. When his pancreas actually exploded, that was his was his sign of no more drinking.
Oh, man.
And he had to kick everything. He's like, I don't even take melatonin on a plane.
Live through that?
Yeah, he did. But it's like, I can't even.
Only if you're a rock star.
Yeah. But nothing. You can't take anything because it could be a gateway to going back, right? So do you ever, are you totally good with no drinking? You ever
totally good with no drinking? Like, I don't know. If someone was to ask me in 3 years, if you're at a Yankee game, do you think you could have one beer and cut it off at that? Yeah, I do. But like, I don't have any interest in alcohol right now. Zero interest. And I could be in a hotel room with a mini bar and I let it sit there because I can make it through 5 days in a hotel room and not drink because it almost killed me.
There's nothing worse than that. Like,
yeah. So like I look at it and I kind of despise it.
Yeah.
It's like my enemy. So like, I'm not going to touch that shit. Like I look at that Grey Goose bottle right there and it's like my enemy. Like that shit.
Yeah. I got a lamp that's made of a Grey Goose bottle.
Fuck you up. Turn that light on. I'm breaking
it. What was DDP's role in helping you?
So DDP, right after the seizure, called me.
Mm.
And we had a long talk, a heart to heart.
Did you know him?
Yeah. So DDP's a guy that I knew. WrestleMania weekend and like pay-per-views and stuff, when you run into Hall of Famers or people that, you know, are in the hotel, it's always you excited for Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hi. Goodbye. Me and DDP would always chat half hour, hour. And,
I'd always talk to Bob Backlund.
That's a trip.
That was my guy.
So we had this connection every time we saw each other. So then, when I had the seizure, he called me. We had a heart to heart, and then he kept checking in with me. And then after we did the Garden in April, the night before WrestleMania, he had heard from somebody that I was sober, in great shape, doing well. So he called me and congratulated me on that. And he's like, "All right, now me and you are going to get to work. We're going to get you back in shape for wrestling, to make a wrestling comeback." Not only that, DDP is like very positive. He has a great mindset. Like, he's helped me mentally, emotionally. Like, when I go stay with him, it's like a family atmosphere. So we do, you know, we do DDP yoga, we get to work, but at the same time, I feel like a part of the family. We eat dinner together, me and his family. And so he's helped me, I'd say, more importantly, on the emotional and mental side of things than the physical. The physical, definitely, he's helped me stay in shape, get in better shape, be more flexible, things that I need to perform wrestling-wise. But more importantly, he's helped me, like I said, mentally.
I think wrestling is a mental game more than ever was anything.
Well, sure. And so the whole concept of DDP yoga is a very positive mental state.
Yeah.
Like I always said to anybody that tries it, if you believe it's going to work, it works, and it fucking really works.
Yeah.
If you don't buy it, it's not going to work because you have to want that. So it's good that you had somebody that gives you some positivity, because I think that's very important when you're in the
position
you're in.
So important, bro.
Right?
And you know, because we worked in the WWE, it's the classic mindset of, it's not good enough, do it again. It's not good enough, do it again. It's not good enough, do it again. That is literally a mechanism for business that is used by corporations around the world to get the best out of their talent, we can call it.
Right.
So when you're constantly being barraged with you did terrible or you're not good, or that could play with your psyche, or you could go the other route and say, fire me.
Mm-hmm.
Go right the fuck ahead. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and when I got into the WWE, bro, I was told I was going to be fired from day one. And I was told I was going to be a manager. So I didn't think I was going to be a wrestler. Mm-hmm. So I wrote promos all day, every day for like 6-7 months. And they didn't give me a name, which I didn't remember until we just ran into a Luchasaurus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So me and Cass used to work with Luchasaurus in FCW.
We do street team bang posters on walls, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, back in the day, you want to get people to come to the show back in FCW. There was no radio or anything. It was go put tickets at the 7-Elevens in Fort Pierce, and every single telephone pole better be marked when the wrestlers drive into town, because if they're not, the promoter, Alfred, and, you know, know, Steve Kern and Dusty Rhodes are going to shit on you. Like, you drove into Fort Pierce. I didn't see any posters on any telephone poles. Yep. Yeah, exactly. So we were doing that. And I remember when we were in the WWE, I was told I was going to be fired. So I didn't think I was ever going to get a name. You know what I mean? So Mojo got a name like 2 weeks in. Like Baron Corbin, who came from the NFL, got a week. It got like a name like 3 weeks later. Charlotte gets a name like 4 weeks later. I get a name 7 months later, bro.
You didn't have a name?
And tell them why, Cass. Tell them why. Well, so good.
So when you first get there, you have to suggest like names for yourself.
11.
10 names. It's 10 names that you would like. So he was always known as EA all day. In all his promos that I had seen on YouTube before he even came down for his tryout, yeah, this is EA all day. So all of his all of his names that he suggested had a first name with an E and a last name with an A. And the best one was by far Esteban Apples. So he put 10 names with EA.
Right. And then that's your real name is Eric Arndt, right?
Yeah.
And then his 11th name was Canyon Seaman. Canyon Seaman was the head of like talent development at that point for NXT and developmental. So his only name that wasn't EA that he wanted was Canyon Seaman, the guy's name that was pretty much our boss.
Did you know that?
Of course.
Well, you just chose it.
It was a joke. I was like, they told me that I needed to submit a name that didn't have EA.
Right.
So I submitted 9 names with EA, and one name was Canyon Seaman.
Which is the worst name ever, be honest. That's a real name, too, by the way.
Yes, it's a real name of the boss at NXT. So when I submitted the name, I thought it would be funny. You know what I mean? Like, I've only been there for 3
Once
weeks.
Again,
there I am.
The stuff that gets you heat.
There I am. Exactly. You know,
heat magnet, right?
Yeah, heat magnet.
That is it.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Yeah. You know, the one time we had a promo class, Dusty Rhodes, dude, Baron Corbin was up there cutting a terrible promo. Baron Corbin was trying to get help, and Dusty was helping him. And I just raised my hand. Everybody looked at me, and I just farted loud as hell. They fined me $250. Fired me that night, and then I got back into work the next day, and they rehired me.
You're like George Costanza; you just showed up and ignored the fact you got fired.
I love that reference.
That's
right
great.
There.
Yeah. So, how did you end up with Enzo Amore? Then is that one? The one?
I pitched for like 7 months, man, and they would not give me the name Enzo Amore. And to me, Enzo, like when I was looking up names, meant like in Italian, number one, head of the house, leader. And then Amore obviously means love. So to me, I'm a big Bob Marley head, one love. So Enzo Amore kind of meant one love in my mind. I don't know if it actually does. You can ask in Italian. But, you know, that's also another thing with me, bro, is I'm a huge pothead. And I'm open about it now. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm out of the company and I can talk about it. For 6 years in the WWE, I was never seen in a picture with a beer in my hand. Mm-hmm. Never. I couldn't smoke pot in the WWE for 5 years. They fined you for it. $2,500. And I was broke. I started off making $600 a week in the WWE for a year. So I was taking out credit cards just to pay my, you know, bills.
Yeah.
So when I finally looked at my bank account, probably like 6 months into the main roster, I was like, you know what? I might could take a fine right now. And I lit up a blunt again for the first time. And to me, that is my medicine, bro. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says. It is my creation. It is what I do. I'm not a big drinker. I was a big drinker when I was in the WWE and I couldn't smoke pot. Mm-hmm. When I couldn't smoke pot, now that I could smoke again, and I was living in LA, you know, where it's legal. I was just, man, to me, like drinking wasn't an issue because this was my vice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I see the evil that drinking can do. And to me, I'm mind blown. I'm like, okay, this can kill you. Mm-hmm. And it's on the corner of every store in the country. Marijuana, I don't know that a guy's ever smoked a joint, beat the shit out of his wife. You know, like I got hammered drunk. Mm-hmm. Something happened, but this is legal. So it helped me. I rubbed the CBD cream all over my body when I was on the road in the WWE, and that'll get you fined $2,500.
Really?
Yeah.
Even CBD. Yeah, their testing is so strict. It's really, it's a little bit over the top. I think. But, you know, it saved guys, I guess, from, you know, dying. But I don't know what the pot. You got to do the Randy Orton and just give him 25 grand a pop and go, here's for the next 10.
Yeah, man. Dude, I mean, and that's the thing that a lot of guys don't know is that, like, half the locker room probably smokes pot.
Yeah.
And why do we do that? Bro, you can't do pills. You can't do drugs. If you drink, you might end up like Cass.
Whoa, you know,
you know, we don't, I don't want any of that stuff to happen to me. But when I got a flight for 21 hours, okay, and I'm looking up in first class and I see Kane, see Jericho, see, dude, I don't care if I have the cruiserweight title around my waist. I'm not getting a first class seat, bro. So I'm going to humbly take my seat in the back. But for 21 hours on that flight, bro, I'm eating as many edibles as I can in LA before we head to Japan. You know? Yeah.
So now that you were gone from WWE, you guys were fun, now you're reconnected. You're feeling better, Cass. You're feeling better, Enzo. How did you guys reconnect as a team and decide you want to get out there again?
Well, Enzo was adamant about not wrestling.
And I mean, that's my best friend in the world telling you this. You know what I mean? Like, when I say adamant, when I first saw him again, you know what I mean? And he wants to work and he wants to, and I was like, no, bro. No thanks.
And so I guess Enzo on a random day gets a phone call from somebody.
It was the day that my grandmother died.
Gets a call from someone that works under the Sinclair Broadcasting umbrella, and then he calls me.
If that's
says,
not
hey,
a,
you,
I
hey,
mean,
you
I don't
in?
Care who you are in pro wrestling, that'll get you up off your ass.
Somebody actually from Sinclair or from
in Madison
someone.
Square Garden.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So someone from the garden called you.
No. Someone from Sinclair.
Someone from Sinclair Broadcasting called me, not Cass.
From Ring of Honor or right. from Sinclair? Whatever.
Sinclair.
Yeah. Somebody from that
Sinclair,
side of right.
Sinclair. Someone from Sinclair.
Wow.
So with that being said,
and then he
they had no me. Idea that me and Cass were friends. Everyone in the world to this point thought me and Cass didn't talk. And when me and Cass started talking again, we didn't tell anyone.
Right.
You know? So then that was when I got that phone call about Madison Square Garden. If you think I didn't show up to Survivor Series to plant a seed to get me back into the ring one day, whether that be 2 years from now or 2 weeks from now at Survivor Series, I was setting a tone for what I wanted to do if I ever came back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to let the world know I'm crazy enough to show up anywhere. And if you try to fight me, I'm going to fight you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what pro wrestling is. That's Conor McGregor picking a fight. That's how we make money in our business. And I'm looking at it from a new light. Social media. This is not the WWE. I'm Enzo, but I'm not in the WWE. I'm not in AEW. I'm not in WCW, New Japan. It doesn't matter where I'm not anywhere. But I have a million followers. I have a voice. And if I want to get back into wrestling, whether that be indies or elsewhere, this is my way of saying, let the bridges that you burn light the way.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. Great.
You know?
Yeah. So he immediately called me, a guy that was on the main roster for 2.5 years, never worked Madison Square Garden.
Really?
Never.
Where you watched so many shows.
Where I went to watch shows as a child. That was always my dream. Even when I went to Springsteen or Billy Joel concerts, I would always look at the middle of the arena and picture myself in the middle of the arena in a wrestling ring. And when I was on Raw, every show at the Garden was SmackDown. When I was still on Raw but injured, then Raw had the Garden shows. So I never got to work the Garden, and that's a bucket list for me.
Of course.
So when Enzo called me and said, are you in? I said, 100%.
Well, I don't even think it was that. I think when they called me, I said, this isn't about me. This is about getting cast in the Garden for the first time ever. He'll tell you that.
Yeah,
it was very important to me because I did the Garden and I did it in a way that I never anticipated. And it was the best moment of my life, my career.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm better than WrestleMania, better than anything I'd ever done.
You guys
in my
are New
life.
York guys, of course.
New York guys, yeah. Bro. Like, you know, like I heard one time, man, there was a rock band that I love, man, that I love. I forget who it was. It might have been. I think it was Hatebreed.
Mm-hmm.
The lead singer Hatebreed said that he would give up every show he'd ever done in his life to do the Garden one.
Jamie Josta, yeah.
And I was like, that's it. Like, that's how I feel. Like, that's how I feel. I was a kid. I saw the Click reunion in the Garden when I was a kid. I saw some incredible matches and things unfold there. And to do it one time was enough for me. Mm-hmm. I had a title match against Kalisto, and Jimmy Fallon was in the front row. And I just kept shit-canning Kalisto and giving him guardrails in front of Jimmy Fallon and being like, this could be you, Jimmy. This could be. And it was like the coolest moment of my life. So
that's great.
When I knew that we had an opportunity to do the Garden again, I was like, man, this is going to be huge.
So how was that night for you guys?
Craziest night of my life. One of the
greatest nights of my life. Yeah.
That was the greatest night of my life, probably. Also, the craziest night of my entire, hands down. I was looking around the next day, wondering where my grandkids were, because I felt like a legend, and I needed to tell them about it.
I gotta tell you this. I'll just say it, dude. When we got outside of the Garden, so security escorted us all the way. They threw us out like a side door. And I was so amped up on adrenaline. I wanted to do, like, go back in there and have another fight, even though, you know, so, but Enzo was so blown up. He was like, we can't walk back to the building, because we got dressed in a building, our manager's building, blocks away. So we got dressed, got ready there, and then we walked over to the Garden to do, once we got
walked in the side door, dude, at 8:20, we were on the side of the arena by 8:30.
We waited for we waited all night for the text. Finally, we got a text that said, come on over.
Oh, wow.
So we left and we walked to the Garden, and I was like, let's just walk back to the office.
I tell you.
He said, no way can I walk. So we got in a cab because he couldn't walk the three blocks. The cab driver's like, really? Three blocks? And you were dry heaving out the side of the cab.
But it's been a while.
If you watch that video back, this guy was working his ass off.
That's why when you do a pull apart or like a real fight situation, that always blows you up, though. It blows you up because it's a real...
Feel like it's real.
There was only one way to do that, dude, and it had to be real.
I thought it was awesome. I think I'd text you after, and I was like, dude, this is amazing.
You DM'd me immediately?
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Thank you, bro.
And I said it to Bubba, too. Yeah. Like, it was so good.
Yeah.
And I bring the question now, because you guys, for people that didn't see it, you guys were basically came to the crowd and attacked some guys at the Briscoes.
The crazy thing is, you know, in wrestling, you got to keep a secret between three people. Sure. Two of them got to die.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, Chris, it was the smartest group of fans in one arena in the history of our business.
Right.
The smartest fans sold out that arena based on the fact you, the Bucks, Kenny Omega were going to be in that card.
Right.
Right? Then when you guys got AEW, you guys came off that card. Yeah. Now they got a debacle on their hands. They got to make some noise, and they got to figure out a way to make this shit really kick off. Well, bro, in that situation, I mean, we literally showed up at 8:20, walked through the side door, didn't see a damn soul, walked straight into Madison Square. We know everybody there too. Cass is a season ticket holder for the Rangers
and the Knicks.
And I go with Cass to the Rangers game the week before. We finesse everybody there. Mm. We finesse all the security, and they all know us because they know wrestling.
Season tickets to the Rangers, the Knicks, and all the Billy Joel and Springsteen concerts. You're like the perfect New Yorker.
Yeah, and I've never worked the Garden.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I've seen Billy there like 6-7 times. Cass has beat me on that.
Yeah.
What I guess because it was such a cool moment, obvious question, why didn't you do more with them, or are you planning on doing more with them?
I think that ball's still on the playing court somewhere. Yeah. I don't know who's got it, but they dropped it.
But we got ghosted. I cut a promo on the Briscoes on Twitter a few weeks after because I was shoot hot. Because the person that we were in contact with, no, we didn't get a text that said, good job, thank you, nothing. And didn't answer our text. Didn't answer.
Weird.
Yeah. Completely ghosted. So it's like, I just wanted a thank you. Because
it was great.
Yeah, because we went out there and there were six other people in that match. Very formidable dudes. Like, guys that could have been an 8-on-2 ass kicking.
Yeah.
We put our lives on the line for that. We didn't even get a goddamn thank you. That's what pissed me off the most. We could have been, because they didn't know what was going on.
Nobody.
So they could have beat the shit out of us. 6-on-2.
So they didn't know you guys were going to be out
there?
Brother,
when I tell you.
Not that I know.
I got to tell you, this is a shoot, Chris. There was three people in the whole company of Sinclair and the guys on the roster working Ring of Honor that knew that was happening.
Hmm.
Three total people.
But anyway,
security thought it was a part of the show,
sure,
and they were not smartened up. So that should have been broken up way sooner.
It looked like
we
a shoot.
We all thought.
Thank you.
I've been in the business for 30 years, and I was almost wondering, like, did they do it again? Because I know we'll talk about the SummerSlam thing you did. I think, did they actually show up?
Survivor Series.
Are they trying to get rolling?
Basically, like, no one knew. How do you work the boys? None of the boys can.
Don't tell them, right?
How do you work the crowd? Nobody can know in the back.
So what got me really angry was Enzo and Cass trended number one worldwide on Twitter. Okay? Now, we trended number one worldwide over the WWE Hall of Fame, over Bret Hart getting attacked.
Wow.
Over the G1 Supercard itself and the NCAA Final Four. We trended number one worldwide for whatever amount of time it was. Okay? We trended number one worldwide, and our segment wasn't even broadcasted.
It wasn't on TV.
By word of mouth and video, fan shot videos, we trended number one worldwide over all those things. I don't understand how a few fans complaining on Twitter, like, could cause someone to be like, nah, let's not
you
use it.
You are a mark.
It's
you got to be a mark. Worked by the fans that are typing on Twitter, you're a mark.
But right now, I mean, and this is no offense, and then Bubba Bully Ray will tell you, Ring of Honor is not hot right now. They need a spark. They need some guys.
That's why I didn't
And
get
it's
it.
The people don't like you because you're not Ring of Honor quality or whatever it was.
They didn't like
that's the heat.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the heat.
I was about to say it and you just stole the word.
I'm not Mr. Five-Star Match. I'm a one-star match. I'm still going to kick your ass.
Exactly. And they don't like us because the idiot fans or the smart marks will say their work rate isn't high enough. They never had a five-star match. They talk too much, whatever. But we got that type of reaction where it wasn't even on television. All these other things were on television, and we trended number one worldwide. Our next appearance that was scheduled, I'll say it, was we were supposed to be at the next show in Chicago, War of the Worlds or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was our next appearance. Got ghosted. Then I saw pictures from that event, and I don't know, attendance seemed like it wasn't very good for that show.
It's down. It is.
So I was just like, I was kind of mad. It's like it was mind-blowing to me why we got ghosted and why, like, we never got brought back.
I think people's feelings genuinely got hurt. I think they genuinely got hurt, which to me, I'm working, bro.
Well, the guys, like, don't like to have the wool pulled over their eyes if they didn't know. I'd be very resentful if the booker didn't tell me you guys are going to be there.
Yeah.
Now, would I be mad at you guys personally? Of course not. You guys are there to do a gig and get a reaction. It's not your fault unless they went.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, who knows the politics of this business, but I do know this, more importantly, that money is money.
Thank you.
I think you guys could make some money with them. And I think
the Briscoes. I mean, yeah. A tag match that should have happened.
They would work with you in a second. They're not going to not want to work with you.
Those are two of the toughest dudes I ever met.
Yeah, and crazy too.
They're fucking nuts.
And crazy, yeah.
I mean, you got to know that, though. When you watched that G1 Supercard, there was four guys that were hands down willing to have a real fist fight in Madison Square Garden.
That was the point.
Let's have a fucking real fight. And whatever happens.
You two guys and the Briscoes.
Whatever happens to us, happens. You get knocked out. I get knocked out. He gets knocked out. That's going to make it great.
It was pretty much
agreement to have a
agreement
without talking to each other, mm-hmm. without ever seeing each other, without ever talking to each other. When this match is over, if you see Enzo and Cass on the side of that apron and they throw beer at you, that means it's on. Mm-hmm. And that's all that needed to be said, because those guys know how to make money. Mm-hmm. They know what money looks like.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly, you got to tell me the story about when you did the thing at the Survivor Series.
Well, that's one of the funniest things that's ever happened to me in my life, hands down. I don't care what anybody says, because you know, you were one of the first people to hit me back about that.
Yeah.
And why did it pop you? Because you thought of the instant reaction that Vince McMahon had sitting there in that computer. He loses his mind when he sneezes because he lost control.
He hates, the thing that he hates is when, people now that the thing where they wave big faces in the crowd, like they have a giant head of somebody.
Yeah.
Those get taken away instantly. So you sitting in the crowd, I can just envision a 100 giant heads to him.
Yep. Yep.
So tell me how you got that going. What'd you do?
They had called me a week before, bro. And
really?
Yeah, you would know better than I would. Is that 01 number Vince's office? Because that
I don't know.
86 This is the last four.
Whoa.
203-612. Yeah.
Edit
that. That's not the number, by the way.
Yeah no, so, not at all.
So you got a number.
So somebody called me from the WWE, and it might have been Vince. It was the office's number plus one. So that's the first number outside of the generic office number. I don't know who it is. Maybe they're calling me to tell me, hey, we got some copyright issues or something. Or maybe they're calling me to bring me back or something. But I had a few people in the office contact me about a month prior about coming back. Would I be interested, or like where my head at? Like, hell no, I'm in a different headspace. I'm not trying to come back. I had bought Survivor Series tickets, that second row seat, about a month and a half prior. So I knew I was doing it. So by the time they called me, it was, do I answer this call or do I show up at their pay-per-view?
Right.
And I knew, like I said, I wanted to book myself back into pro wrestling and I wanted to be the NWO. But how do you do that in 2019 and make it real and make it interesting and make the world buzz? Well, let's throw a wig on. And so people, bro, Chris, when I walked into the arena, there were people who recognized me and I pretended I had a disability, God forgive me, to make it awkward so that you wouldn't stare at me. I was making a weird face. I had a crutch in one arm. I had this wig on. So me and my homie.
It was the worst wig ever.
Oh, God.
So bad.
That picture of me of all time. That selfie I took right before, like, I went in.
It was bowl
my
cut
favorite to... part is, I don't know if people pop for it much, but I screenshot it. My Uber driver to the venue's name was Jesus. And I was like, Jesus, take the wheel, brother.
But you should just wear a mask or something. Oh, it's wrestling. You can get away with
it. I know, dude. I know. So I'm sitting in the second row, and I wanted to come out when the Cruiserweights came out. You know what I mean? But I didn't know when that match was. And I got into the arena, dude, and as I was walking, people were like, hey, is that it? And
they Staples Center, right?
Staples Center, which is also Madison Square Garden.
Sure.
Staples Center, which two venues did I do? So it was like, you know, I planted those seeds. But I already had conversations about Madison Square Garden that weren't, it wasn't about me getting involved in the card as much as it was like throwing my name in the hat. So when I did Survivor Series, dude, Lisa came running up because.
Okay, so you're in the crowd.
I'm in the crowd, and my brother-in-law texts me screenshots of Twitter of people that are tweeting screenshots of their TV and my face
Enzo's
with the wig
here,
on.
Yeah.
Enzo's here. So I know in a moment's time, I'm not going to have enough time to do the Cruiserweight match. And the office is tipped off about this.
Yeah, sooner or later, yeah.
So I got to go. Uh-huh. I got to stand up and rip this wig off. And I stand up and rip the wig off and start doing my dance. And I don't know what I'm saying, bro. But Lisa comes over and grabs me and rips me down, right?
Now, Lisa is a security guard. And
Vince
she,
is brilliant.
Yeah, and she's a bad motherfucker.
She's a bad motherfucker. But bad. More importantly, Vince, why does he hire a woman security?
Do you know what he punch you a woman?
You ain't gonna punch a woman.
Right. And meanwhile, if you did, she'd knock you the fuck out.
Yeah,
anyways,
right. But I don't want no one, Lisa. Yeah, no. Yeah. So Lisa rips me down the chair, but what happens is she rips me into the back. And police and security are coming from every angle. But I showed them my ticket. I purchased my ticket. I'm a law-abiding citizen and a fan. I did not break any laws.
You're right, yeah.
And I knew that I didn't break any laws. Now, with that being said, if you knew that you were not going to break any laws and you are a pro wrestler and you have the ability to trend number one in the world over Survivor Series, over Brock Lesnar, over the main event, and know that Vince has no control and it's his product and you're not even on it. And the next day, Monday, when they go over all those Twitter statistics and they're sitting in that room full of f-ing writers, they don't have a choice but to talk about it.
Right. Yeah.
And I win. Right. So when I get pulled backstage, Lisa immediately grabs me and goes, you got to go to see Vince.
What, so he can punch me?
Wait, so you want me to walk by the boys' locker room right now and go see Vince and Gorilla?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I look at her, hold my ticket up, and I go, Lisa, I don't work here.
Yeah.
And the cops are coming from both sides. And I look at her and she's holding my shirt and it's stretching. And I go, you know, I'm a good person. And she kind of looks at me like almost like tears welled up. And she's like, you're right. and she let go of my shirt, and I sprinted out the side door of the arena as the cops were closing in on me.
Oh my gosh.
And the Uber was waiting for me outside. There was two fans that got the most incredible picture because two fans were late for the show, and they were walking in, and they're like, wait a second, is that Enzo Amore? And I'm like, so disheveled because I just came running out. And I'm like, yeah, man, let's take a picture. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever been tagged in it, but if that kid's listening, bro, you got a great photo.
Did you ever hear anything from the office after that?
The next day, a company-wide memo went out to anybody who was in the office to tell them not to talk to me, mm-hmm. to not do business with me. And the next day, my picture was pasted all over the Staples Center and told not to let me into the arena. And I was like, dude, if I go tonight, I'm the biggest legend ever. But I just couldn't do it.
Did you see this or hear about it?
I didn't. This is at the point in time where I completely checked out on life. Gotcha. So I wasn't watching wrestling. I wasn't watching football. I was for out the thrill of everything.
The thrill of getting away with something like that. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, bro. Yeah. There's no greater feel when you're like 14, you're running, and you know, you're running from danger because maybe you just threw a rock through a window and you're just running, you know? That was what I lived for.
What? So I can tell, obviously, you guys are both motivated. You're excited to be back together. You look great. So what's kind of the goal right now?
The goal right now is, man, I'm going to let life... I'll talk for myself personally. I'm going to let life come to me. I mean, I sought the help that I needed to seek. I'm doing great mentally. The best I felt mentally since I could remember. Mm. Physically, I'm in the best shape of my life, hands down. And, you know, making good money, doing independent bookings and signings and enjoying life. And like, I could do what I want. Like, I'll say,
it's
like,
never been better.
Today's Monday. If I was under contract, I couldn't have flown to Tampa and come done the podcast. Right. So like I can do what I want and go see people that I want to see. So really right now, after everything I went through and almost, you know, losing my life, like I'm just enjoying life, letting life come to me. But in terms of professionally, I got myself in the best shape of my life for a reason. I want to be back in wrestling. I'm going to take as many bookings as I can, work as many matches as I can, get the experience that I need to become a better performer, because ultimate goal is to be back in WWE or to get signed with another company, a big company. Mm. That's my goal. And, you know, I believe I know
that doesn't mean tomorrow,
right? I'm going to be, like I said, I have plenty of money saved up. Like I am patient. I don't need to rush anything. And in terms of like, you know, my look and everything, I believe it came from you actually. Dallas was telling me, you know, he was talking to you about me and you told him, man, just tell him to switch everything up. I don't want to see like the big Kaz gear. I don't want to see him in like boots and trunks. Like tell him to switch everything up. Maybe not what it's.
Thank you, Chris.
Pretty much everything you told Dallas, you said maybe something different with his
Chris
hair.
Chris is low key, like pointed our careers in directions. Yeah.
I'm always watching.
Maybe Enzo should be a cruiserweight.
So
I'm usually right.
So you told him like none of that gear, and you said tell him to do something different with his hair. You know, maybe not wet because he always had it wet in WWE, and like so. Pretty much, I wear what I would wear if I went out to hang out with my buddies, except I don't wear a shirt. I wear Timberland boots, jeans, and I keep my hair down and dry, and it's a different look.
And that's still a hell of a tan.
But that means something though. I think when you're telling people that you've made a change,
yeah,
it's not just in your work rate or your attitude. People can't see an attitude; they can see what you look like.
Yeah,
they can see what your ring outfit is. They can see what your hair is. And I know, like, whenever I change heel and babyface, or change companies, even I would do a completely different thing because I don't want to be Y2J from 20 years ago. You want to be updated and new, which then lets people know that you're serious about it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And it all the gear was a big priority, and then getting my body in shape was a huge priority. And yeah, the tan is always going to be there. You can never be tan enough. But Enzo posted that picture on Twitter, which was like a side-by-side of me from November.
Oh, wow.
And me from a few weeks ago. And it's, if you look at that picture, like someone lit a fire, someone or something lit a fire under this motherfucker's ass. Cause it's a different person. So, I mean, you know, I just want to prove myself to everybody that I'm taking this very seriously. getting my body in shape, getting my look different, and working as much as possible, taking every booking that comes my way to get more experience. So that's what I'm doing.
Are you guys together on all these bookings? Are you, do some on your own?
We do some together. I do some on my own. So
he works a lot.
Yeah.
Cass works a lot. He gets in the ring a lot. Mm. Me, not so much.
But what do you want to do, though?
That's a good question, right? I don't think that I ever saw any of this coming, you know, to be honest. Like, there's a lot of things that I want to do, but, you know, I'm very content with my wrestling career in the WWE. So when I looked at it in retrospect, coming off the heels of Madison Square Garden and what maybe could come next, I was on live events with Big Cass working the indies. Now, shout out Mike Lombardi.
Great guy, man. Northeast Wrestling,
man.
He does a great job.
Does an outstanding job, and he's a Dusty Rhodes guy, and so are me and Big Cass. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? His mentor in the business was Dusty Rhodes, and Mike has been booking Cass and I on autograph signings, and I was on a handful of those, not wrestling, not in the ring, not on a microphone, not a part of the show, just signing autographs at a wrestling show. Beforehand, Cass works a match later on that day, and I just would sit backstage and watch and talk to the boys. It was in that moment, talking to the boys, that I realized, holy shit, like, I have quite a bit to offer here. You know, like, you don't know it. You know, how would I know, Chris? I was in the WWE for 6 years. First match I ever had, first ring I ever got into, first bump I ever took, and that was the only way I ever knew or learned. When you go to the indies, there's kids that are so hungry and thirsty for knowledge, and they just want to know what it's like up there. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know that. How the hell would I know that? I never worked the indies in my life.
You started there, right? So yeah, you're not going
to
know any difference.
I have no idea. So I go to the indies, and a kid like Brian Pillman Jr. comes up to me, wants me to watch his match, you know, ask me a few questions. Kids that are having a tag match, just little intricacies. Baby faces, when you kick out, turn to your stomach. Turn to your side. Don't lay on your back. If I'm a heel, why aren't I pinning you? Mm-hmm. Just little things, bro. Like, right, don't blow your baby face's comeback if you're taking the heat in a tag. Mm-hmm. Evade. Move out of the buckle and tag his ass. Mm-hmm. And you don't even realize you have this knowledge. You're working with Chris Jericho. You're working with, you know, guys on top. Mm-hmm. How the f*** do you not learn? So here I am. And now all of a sudden, I'm in the ring with Brian Pillman Jr. having a match last Friday. Absolute freedom to do whatever I want. Moves, match, calling it out there, you know, and it was probably one of the coolest things that I've ever had happen to me in my wrestling career. And now a new spark has been lit under my ass. It's like, wait a second. I don't have Vince or Hunter yelling at a producer, a referee telling me what to do, giving me time cues, telling me what camera to work. You know, I know when the red lights on, I'll find that motherfucker.
A writer handing you a promo.
Exactly. So this past time I wrestled on Friday night, like you said, Chris, I've seen you reinvent yourself so many times. Cass just slightly reinvented himself with a new look. How was I going to reinvent myself? Well, this was just a one-off match, because the last match I had was at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center the night before the 25th anniversary of Raw. And it was the main event of the Cruiserweight division, first and only ever tour. And I was like, dude,
right,
I'm done. Like, I can't beat that. I'll never be able to beat that. Well, here we are at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, the same place that I had my last match. And Mike offers me this opportunity to pick my opponent and have a match. And I loved Pillman's father. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brian Pillman was one of my favorites from Flying Brian to the Loose Cannon, and the whole angle with the gun and Austin and shit, dude.
Yeah. Great stuff.
So I came out to no music. A lot of Raven comparisons because I had wet hair and a leather jacket on. But I didn't say a word in the match to the fans. I didn't run out backwards. I was not Enzo Amore whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I just locked up and had a wrestling match. And I mean, I locked up and had a wrestling match, and it was like there was no people there because I was just working with a kid, and it was more about him. Mm-hmm. Listen to these people. We're coming up when the people come. We're going to go down when the people, you know, think that we're going to go up. We're going to, you know, not reinvent the wheel here. We worked a headlock. I worked a headlock the entire match.
Old school, brother. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I had a headlock match, and there was no comeback. It was just two falsies. He got one, I got one, go home. And he learned more in that match than he did in any other matches that he's had, because we didn't call it in the back. Mm-hmm. We didn't do a million things in the back. You know, if I run tackle, drop down, leapfrog, hip toss, drop kick, I just powder. This isn't the WWE anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about the next spot. When I lock up, why'd you lock up twice? Go behind. Take a wrist. No, I locked up five times in that match.
Well, that's the thing, because you have, like, I'm sure you felt that too, Cass, being on the indies. You have the freedom to be the artist that you are, or the artist that you want to be.
And you could try things out.
Right.
In WWE, on live television, you can't just try something out. So now I can do something, whether it's a mannerism or yelling something. And if it's the shits, then I'm like, well, not doing that again.
Yeah,
but if it's good, I'll try it the next time. And something that I've started doing is I'm just, after what happened at the Garden, you know, going off of that, I'm just showing up on random independents and just destroying people. Mm-hmm. So pretty much I've done it three times so far. Is I'll talk to the promoter. And again, I'll show up in a rental car, in gear, ready to go. Get a text from the promoter when to come into the building, hop the rail, do my deal, cut a promo, you know, put the promotion over, and then re-hop the rail, leave the building right away, and hop back in my rental and leave. And I've really enjoyed doing that, because it's fun as shit, just showing up on it could happen anywhere.
Dude, I'm having the time I live in these locker rooms.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, Jerry Lawler's still in there, bro. Booker T's still over there in the corner. John Moxley's right over there.
How did you like working Mox a couple weeks ago?
And that was where I got my itch.
Gotcha.
Because I was sitting ringside.
Because he's a guy that's been rejuvenated by leaving as well, more than anybody.
Bro, that was watching them work. But more importantly, listening to the conversation after the match and the exuberance in John Moxley and Big Cass.
It was really good, man.
Yeah.
It was good, man.
I needed
that. That was a great John Moxley impression, Jericho.
That's really good, man.
It's crazy. I lived with him for 2 years.
Oh,
he was
wow.
my roommate in Tampa. Okay. Yeah, he was my roommate in FCW for 2 years. I was in the same company as him.
I imagine him explaining the Moxley. Like,
I've been in the same company with him for 5 years, FCW all the way through WWE. I had never faced him, not in a tag match, not in a six-man tag, an eight-man tag, one-on-one, not even in a practice match at FCW. I'd never faced him, and we lived together for 2 years.
That's so strange.
Yeah, and it's so crazy. So then, like, when I got the opportunity to wrestle him, you know, one-on-one, in one of his first indie matches back and one of my first indie matches back, it was awesome. Yeah, and again, like, yeah, you know, the low voice, but, you know, maybe we'll call, you know, I just went out there and listened to him, because that's what he wanted to do. Like, we had some stuff called, but yeah, I just listened to the guy.
But next to nothing called, because I was there.
Yeah.
And it was something brand new to my eyes. I had been in the business for 6 years, blinded by the light that is the WWE.
as we wind down here, like I said, there's so many opportunities now, because the business is the rising tide raises all the boats, you know, so there's a lot of options, I think, for you guys and places that you can go and places you can work. You have the name value, you have the experience, you have the following. I still think it's just a matter of time before WWE calls you guys to come back. It just seems like you're such an act created by them. And plus, Vince loves second chances.
They didn't make me who I am. They found me like this, dog.
No, but I'm just saying, it seems to me that you guys are doing a lot what Eddie Guerrero did when he got fired. Similar for what you got fired for, Cass, just losing his fucking mind.
Yeah.
And he went back. Finley did it too when he got fired for playing the national anthem or whatever it was. You go back to the indies, you show what you can do, you show that you still care, you earn that respect back, and then you'll get the call.
Yeah, and we're not tied down. You know, Enzo has so many opportunities in other forms of entertainment.
Sure, yeah.
And it's so he gets called by WWE to go back by himself, I'll be cheering his ass on from my living room every Monday. If it's the other way around, he'll be cheering my ass on. And if it's New Japan, AEW, any big company that calls one of us, you know, if we don't get called together, like, we're going to be, you know, fully supportive of the other person.
Yeah. And I think that I had no idea that you could make more money on the indies than you could in the WWE.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even joking.
No, like, I know.
That to me was mind blowing. Because I went 572 days in between matches and like not taking bookings. And I'm like, how much money did I leave on the table?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's one of those things, like I said, because there's so many opportunities and places to go. So last couple questions for you. What's your favorite match that you had as Enzo and Cass? Is the one that stands out?
Say London.
London or Roadblock Toronto.
Yeah, Roadblock.
Dash and Dawson.
Anytime we work Dash and Dawson, those guys can't have a bad match.
Yeah.
You know?
Dash is a great dude, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Those guys are both great dudes.
Opening up SummerSlam with you and Kevin in our hometown in front of friends and family. That was
That was in New York. It was at Barclays Center, right?
That was awesome. Yeah.
That was a cool finish. We almost killed you on that code breaker.
It was awesome. Awesome.
Who was that one promo we did where you said, who do you think you are, Santa Claus?
Yeah, but, yeah. Chris. That was Cincinnati. No. I remember putting that together. And you said, yeah, maybe I am. I'll come down there and sit on your lap.
That is the best.
And I was like,
Anaheim?
And I was like,
No. It was in Cali, right?
No, it was in Cincinnati. Positive.
It was in Cincinnati?
Yeah. And I remember, and then I was like, first of all, you sit on Santa's lap. It doesn't matter. You just said you're going to come sit on my lap.
You called me a hip-hop hobbit in Anaheim, and I couldn't. I had to fucking try to keep a straight face.
Man.
I think I just popped.
You guys were so easy to work with because you have such great characters. It was always a blast to go out there, especially as a baby face, to kind of play the, you know, I'll just come sit in your lap. And you said you were something. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
You said, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
What about on your own singles matches?
Working with Brian on house show main events was awesome.
With Brian, Daniel Bryan. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, my match with him at Money in the Bank in Chicago, my last television match before my firing. That comes to mind. That stands out. I love that match.
Yeah. How could you not have a good match with him, right?
Yeah.
I main evented Monday Night Raw in a lumberjack match for the Cruiserweight title. But the interesting tidbit about that is that day, Neville didn't show up to work. So he called me. I mean, if you know, you only know this because you're backstage. Me and Neville are best friends.
Your best friends.
Yeah. I mean, we drive together.
That's right. Yeah. What a strange mix.
Yeah. Right? Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So me and Neville are best friends and the world has no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. So the whole 205 Live thing was pre-planned by me and him. Driving around and making towns, talking about what we wanted to do. And what was the goal of it for him though? He just came off the heels of working the busiest schedule in pro wrestling. Because you remember, Neville was getting booked on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and Raw, and then flying on to SmackDown when everybody else went home from Raw. So he was burnt out, bro. He was burnt out. He wanted to get off 205 Live and start working guys on the main roster that were in big spots. And when he had the conversation with Vince, when he lost the title to me at No Mercy, Vince said, I'm going to keep you in 205 Live. And that was not the plan. So Neville was like, well, no, I'm not staying in 205 Live and I'm not turning babyface, because he wanted him to work face against me being heel. And the goal for me was to keep Neville face. And then when he drops the title to me, he doesn't get a rematch because of the clause in a contract I have that says he can or whatever. So he goes to the main roster. When he wasn't going to the main roster, he just didn't show up to Raw. And I was the only one talking to him that day. So I knew he wasn't there. And I get the script handed to me. Neville and Enzo in the main event of Monday Night Raw. Neville's not even there. All the writers are walking around backstage, just, you know, going about their day. I walk up to Ryan Ward in catering. I'm like, hey, man, so what are we going to do tonight? And he's like, oh, it's you and Neville in the main event. I'm like, yeah, but he ain't here. He's like, excuse me? They run into Vince's office. Complete panic. Changed the entire show about 30 minutes before. 5 minutes before they let the doors open to the arena, all the cruiserweights are around the ring and we're going over the finish to the new Kalisto joining 205 Live lumberjack match that was just put together because Neville didn't come.
Wow.
And I was supposed to hold the title straight to Mania. Instead, I dropped it to Kalisto that night to win it back at the next pay-per-view because we needed to pop the crowd. Something needed to happen in that main event. So
that was it.
And I worked that lumberjack match. It was the biggest cluster put together, and we pulled it off. And the ovation Kalisto got at the end of that match when he beat me to hit his finish off that top rope let me know, like, I'm doing good business.
Right.
And that, to me, was the ultimate. Like,
well, I think you're going to do some great business upcoming. I think you might want to change your name to Esteban Apples.
I agree.
Watch what happens here.
Favorite Springsteen song?
Oh, my. Brilliant Disguise.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. You didn't go to the river.
I went to Joan Jett the other night, and she played Light of Day.
Oh, yeah.
That's who have you not seen? Because you saw Adam Lambert and Queen last night?
Yeah, it's been the craziest week. I saw Hart and Joan Jett on Saturday. I saw Queen and Adam Lambert last night.
Bro, I saw a video of you rocking out at a concert, bro. Kiss in the Garden, right?
Front row.
It was incredible. It was so good when I saw that video at home.
Oh, man. Dudes, thank you so much for coming here, man.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, man. It means the world to us. And, we appreciate you. Well, like I said, when I walked onto the property here, you got a beautiful estate off taking flatbacks. It's what me and Cass can only aspire to do.
Yeah.
But more importantly than anything, next time I come here, I need to see a goat roaming around the property.
Yeah, we'll get one. A fainting goat.